This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about family law, but we're focusing on the law regarding the visitation rights of grandparents with their grandchildren. So if you're a grandparent, I think you might want to listen to this. If you're a parent, you might also want to listen to this. If you're a child and you're listening to public radio, I think you should listen to this also. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Additional funding of the program is provided by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. My guests are family law attorneys and members of the Family Law Section of the State Bar, Alexandra O'Neill Muller, with law office in Lake Forest, California, Erica Collins of the San Diego law firm of Basie and Fritz, and B.J. Fathom, California Board of Legal Specialization certified specialist in family law with office in San Jose. So what we're going to do is start off with a little overview of what the issue is, and then we're going to talk about some of the most significant issues. And Erica, if you would start us.
Hi, I'm hopeful that most of you today really don't need the advice. I'm hopeful that parents get along with their parents and can see their grandchildren in a normal situation. However, it is under certain circumstances where grandparents don't get to see their grandchildren very often. And the California law allows for some situations for grandparents to ask the court to make some orders for visitation. Those circumstances normally occur when one of the parents is deceased, where one of the parents is divorced from the other parent and they're fighting in a court system. There's a third circumstance where there is military deployment and then the parties are divorced and there's custody orders. Normally what happens is that one of the persons gets the children while the other party's deployed, but that means that it's possible that the grandparents of the deployed parent don't get to see their grandchildren, and they can ask the court in that circumstance. And there's a very rare fourth circumstance when both parents are still together. However, the court is very strict on those rules. So what we'll be discussing today are, what are your options? What can you do? What limitations exist for the grandparents to see their children? Because in normal circumstances, you don't get to have that type of order, because it is typical that parents get to determine what is in their children's best interest. But today we're going to discuss, what can you do if, for example, you're not getting to see your grandchildren and the parent is deceased, or something else in your circumstances?
Let me come back, Erica, to you for a moment. But first of all, I want to say, for those of you who may not be in California and are in other states, since we are on the NPR satellite, I just want to mention to you a great resource for you to find out what the basic law may be in your state, is the website for the American Grandparents Association, which is grandparents.com. If you do some searching in that, grandparents.com, and look for the title, Grandparents' Rights, State by State, you will find that there are brief references to the laws in each of our states of the United States. So let me, Erica, come back to you for a moment. You mentioned military deployment, which it seems like it may be more and more that we are faced with as a nation. But you also said if the parents in a military deployment situation are divorced, does it have to be that they're divorced?
Not always, no.
Ah, okay.
But typically, it's more often seen in the divorce situation, but it's not necessarily required.
Okay. If grandparents then want to have visitation with a grandchild, start us off, if you would, BJ. What are some of the things that you feel are the most significant?
I think the most significant, and you kind of raised this a little bit, Chuck, is about the different states. One of the things that people have to understand is that family law itself, and that's what applies when you're talking about grandparents' rights at this level, at what Erica was discussing, is state by state. And you have to understand that. But what's interesting here is, what's a little bit unique under the grandparents is, there was a case that came out in 2000 that kind of said, well, it did say that you have the still the United States Constitution, in this case that came out with a U.S. Supreme Court case. And what that said was that parents under the U.S. Constitution, not the different state constitutions, mm-hmm. but under the U.S. Constitution, has a due process right to essentially parent their children. And it's very hard to overturn those decisions. And so what this case said back in 2000, it was called Troxel, but that part's not important for the consumers, is that the states, when they make their laws, and each state has their own statutes or codes regarding grandparents' visitation, they cannot violate that constitutional right.
The right of due process.
Exactly.
Of the parents.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. so that's what this case said. In that case, mm-hmm. they said the Washington state mm-hmm. statute that was talking about what rights the grandparents had was too ambiguous and overbroad. And it was unconstitutional
really?
And struck down. Mm-hmm. And so the U.S. Supreme Court said that Washington's statute was unconstitutional and had to be rewritten, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So you may look at the different states, but be aware that there's this overall broad arm called the U.S. Constitution that oversees it. And so it's not unusual, because this was just in 2000. Where Washington was found to violate the U.S. Constitution.
That's very interesting. Let me let all of you know this. If you are listening to this live program on December 2nd, in half an hour approximately, I will give you, or I will welcome you to call in with a question, comment, if you like. It can be about grandparents' rights. It can also be about a much broader range of family law, if you'd like to do that. But let me give you the toll-free number. Again, this is for those of you listening to the live program, wherever you may be, whether it's California or in any other state. It's on December 2nd, and the number is 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. We'll be taking some calls in about 25 minutes or so, something like that. What are the basic, Alex, down there in San Diego County, what are the basic factors that you feel are important when a grandparent or grandparents are trying to get visitation with their grandchildren? What do you feel they should do, or how do you feel this should be done?
Well, a grandparent that's interested in pursuing an action for any visitation with his or her grandchildren needs to be kind of cognizant about the fact that they will bear the burden of proving their situation, and that's important. They've got to know that the burden of getting their argument across to the court and establishing their case will fall on them and not on the parents of the child. And mm-hmm. so the first thing is for the grandparent to develop a belief that they believe they can prove that they've got a substantial relationship with the child, a bond. Mm-hmm. And that's generally evidenced by a lot of time spent, maybe, you know, an every weekend thing, maybe living in the grandparents' home with the parents, maybe having a routine with the grandparent and the child, that's substantial time that essentially, if that were taken away from the child, that the child would be harmed by that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What if the child really doesn't want to spend time with the grandparent? What's the situation there?
Well, in general,
I suppose most children wouldn't feel that way, but some may. Although right now BJ is shaking his head in a way that maybe there are more of them that don't want to spend. And Erica, please.
Okay, yeah. So some of this is going to be a county-by-county basis.
In California, yeah.
In California.
But
yeah.
For the kids, I think it's more age.
Correct.
Age, okay.
I represent minor children, and I get from them, depending, it's like, you know, why do I have to spend Christmas with my grandparents? You know, my grandfather's only going to fall asleep or whatever. So there are children that are like, really? In fact, what we used to tell my daughter is, you know, if you don't behave, we're going to send you for the whole summer with Papa, who was a Marine drill sergeant.
Ooh.
And she loved her grandfather dearly, but she knew she'd have to toe the line for the whole summer. And she was like, oh, Got her to behave.
That's good.
So there are kids that are resistant, and that is a factor that the court will look at depending upon the age of the child, though, too.
And that goes, again, what I was trying to say is, like, for example, in San Diego, normally when you're having this situation, it's when a parent or both parents aren't allowing the grandparents time. That's normally where this starts.
Why are they not allowing the grandparents' time?
We don't know.
We don't know.
Sometimes it's what they're doing. It could be, these are the normal circumstances. One, the grandparents have such a close bond that they're used to seeing the grandchildren more often, and suddenly the parents are like, no, you get more limited time, and suddenly the grandparents are like, but we want more. Mm-hmm. So that's one circumstance.
Okay.
Then you have second circumstances where maybe the grandparent had done something to the child. Sometimes they're alcoholics or they have abused drugs or they're not stable mentally or physically or something that would make a parent not want the child to spend time with their grandparent.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that may lead to the bond issue because we don't know how close their bond is. Or then there's circumstances where when you're asking about would the children have a voice, normally it comes down to the breakdown in the relationship of the parent and the grandparent of the minor. And so what happens is they, in our jurisdiction and most, they have to go to what's called a family court services or a mediation services. I don't know. Each county's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is you meet with a licensed clinical social worker or a master's of social work who basically helps the parents and or the grandparents try to work something out. However,
who is an employee of that county.
Correct.
Okay.
And the problem is that not every county is what's called a recommending county.
Mm-hmm.
If they can come to an agreement, then the court will get to see that. So I know like in Los Angeles, it's not recommending. However, in San Diego, those mediators will write a report and it's confidential. It's not public record. And it goes to the judicial officer and the parties involved to review it. And as the child gets older, this is answering a question about the child's input. What happens is sometimes a mediator will speak to the grandchild to see. Because sometimes grandchildren, the child, will be a little bit more, you know, will respond more as to, do you want to have a relationship? Do you not want to see your grandparent? And they ask them why. They don't always spill out or spell out why, because they don't want to harm the child, and they'll intonate why. But what normally happens is when the child's younger, they're more inclined to be honest because they're not trying to hide anything. Maybe they don't want to see a grandparent because a grandparent has done something a parent doesn't know, and this comes out.
Yes.
As they get older, there's a statute what BJ was talking about earlier that talks to a child's wishes, even when it comes to parent visitation, that's what's considered in grandparent visitation as to why they should or should not spend time. But it has to be something they take into consideration based on their maturity and age. And that's why there's differences in each county.
Alex, I hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to jump in that one of the most common things that I've seen happen is that sometimes parents and grandparents become very involved with each other at a stage in life. Maybe the children have moved in with the grandparents, maybe meaning the adult children, and they're financially dependent on their parents. And so what occasionally happens is that the adult children, the natural parents of the minor, feel that their parental position has been infringed upon and that it's really the grandparents who are acting as the parents and that the natural parents aren't making any of the decisions or aren't really running the show as parenting the children. And so when those parents of the child feel that their rights as parents and their natural place in the arrangement has been stepped on, they often rebuff the grandparents' wishes to be involved and say, well, take a step back. You can't be involved now because you've taken over. And the courts, the case that BJ mentioned earlier, that's kind of at the heart of it, that the rights of parents in parenting needs to be preserved as a precious right in this country. And so grandparents don't come first. They come at best second, but generally further down on the line, which makes the grandparent role a tricky one.
Alex is absolutely right. And here's another twist to that, because what the law has been saying is that if the parents or the primary custodial parent is denying visits to the grandparent, there's a presumption that 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 decision is in the best interest of the child. Mm-hmm. And this is what Alex was alluding to. And so that burden shifts to the grandparent. And that's what she was saying, is that it's up to the grandparent to prove that that presumption is wrong, that you have to overcome that. Now, another factor that I've seen, and this has actually been taught to me by several mental health professionals that I work with, psychologists and licensed marriage family therapists, one of the things to be aware of, and we hear this all the time in custody cases, one parent is polarizing or alienating the child from the other parent for whatever reason. Mm. A good red flag that one parent is actually doing this is that they're not only cutting off that parent, they're cutting off that parent's family. So meaning, let's say mom is polarizing the children against dad. Oh, and by the way, all of a sudden, paternal grandparents can't mm-hmm, see. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That would be possibly a prime case for grandparent visitation. But when it extends past the parent, that shows we call it restrictive gatekeeping. That's no longer protective gatekeeping, because you're not protecting the child from that parent. Mm-hmm. You're actually restrictive gatekeeping that child from having anything to do with that parent's family.
There are – I want to mention to for people in California that there's a very good website that you might want to go to wherever you are in California. It's a website for the California courts. And this one is about visitation rights of grandparents, and covers a number of areas that might be helpful to you if this is something that is confronting you. courts.ca.gov/17976.htm. 17976.htm. Another thing that's helpful in California, and I think most counties have them, they may have a difference in how they name the office, but there are, in most of the counties in California, there are self-help centers where you can go and get some help from county employees. There's also in many other counties an office called the Family Law Facilitator's Office. And so if you are a grandparent and you're facing one of these issues where we're talking about visitation, you might want to go to your county's self-help center or inquire at the main office by calling the main county office if there is a family law facilitator's office, and finding out how you may do that. If a grandparent, and we haven't talked about this, but if a grandparent is concerned about what one or both parents of the child are doing, maybe there are drugs involved, maybe there's alcoholism, maybe it's one parent has this problem as opposed to the other. Talk a little bit about that, where grandparents are concerned about how the child is being cared for, and whether or not it may be something that a grandparent might want to look into in terms of guardianship of that child or those children. BJ, would you?
Sure. And that's what started a lively conversation before, mm-hmm. because – and again, this is where county by county and judge by judge differ. So a lot of times – here's some of the different cases that I've seen. It can start several ways. So one, what is guardianship? Guardianship is where somebody other than the parent is given legal right to custody of the child, and it's because that neither parent is capable of taking care of the child at that time. And most of the time, I would say in California that I've seen, and Eric and Alex can jump in, it's usually drugs, unfortunately, mm-hmm. drugs and or alcohol.
What if you have, if I may mm-hmm. interject this, what if you have one parent who is sober, no drugs, no alcohol, but the other parent, and the parents are still living together, but the other parent is either on drugs or alcoholism. Is this some basis upon which a grandparent might consider some kind of potential petition for guardianship?
That could be hard. The only way I have seen something like that happen is where CPS, Child Protective Services, mm-hmm. has come in and made a finding that even though that one parent is sober or clean and is capable is really not protecting the children. That's a finding of child abuse and child neglect.
I see.
If they are staying with a parent that is not taking care of the children. And in that particular case, I think that what they'll usually do is they may even remove the child from the home at that time and start looking to place the child elsewhere, which then you're in a dependency situation. And so if that's the case, that's when possibly a grandparent, before the child gets stuck into the system as a ward of the state under a dependency case, wants to come in right away and file their guardianship. But you better be sure that you can prove that not only is one parent completely incapable and unfit, but the other parent has refused or incapable of protecting the children from that parent.
That's very interesting. All right, let me let you know if you tune in a little bit late. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. The topic is we're talking about the law regarding the visitation rights of grandparents with their grandchildren. My guests are family law attorneys, members of the family law section of the State Bar, Alexandra O'Neill Muller, Erica Collins, and B.J. Fathom. In a few minutes, for those of you who are listening to the program live, you'll be able to call in and on our toll number and talk with my guests. It's 866-798-8255. In the statewide version of the program, which we have, which is the first half hour, we have just a few more minutes left, and I'd like to cover those things that we haven't even touched upon that you might like to bring up. Alex, what thoughts do you have in this remaining few minutes of the half-hour session?
I wanted to add on to what you were discussing with BJ just a minute ago. It's significant for grandparents to know that coming in and filing for a guardianship where you've got essentially one fit parent and one parent that you believe is unfit for whatever reason does not always benefit the grandparent. In short, I had a situation where grandparents wanted to get grandchild away from their daughter's partner, husband at the time, and they were very happily together, so they accused him of various criminal activities, and the Child Protective Services decided that they would need to live apart. So the daughter did just that and moved out from the home that she was sharing with the husband, and at the same time had the court on her side saying grandparents have caused a mess and stirred up a hornet's nest, so they're not going anywhere near grandchildren. So it's important to note that you can make a bad situation worse by interfering in that in that way. And so it's important to kind of think through your actions ahead of time, because sometimes while they may not be completely irreversible, you create a quagmire.
That's very interesting. What other thoughts do you have, Erica?
One of my other thoughts are, grandparents who are listening, if you have any type of relationship with the parent, either it's your child or the in-law, you might want to think twice about filing something, because as Alex just mentioned, you can cause a quagmire. You can actually cause more of a schism in your relationship. So if you are getting visitation or you are seeing your grandchildren, it's something you need to think twice about, because a legal proceeding, you've seen people get divorced. You've seen paternity actions. You see how bad it causes fighting when people don't get along. So some parents may see this as your declaration of war, because they may think that you're just basically attacking them as a parent. And so I've seen that happen, where it becomes very disgruntled, where the grandparent comes in and then basically says, I don't get to see my grandchild, there's a problem, there's this. And it makes it worse, because when they were allowing some visitation, suddenly it's, what are you doing? And then the court says, well, what did you do to make this relationship worse? It can cause you problems more so than may have existed before, and you may cause that relationship to actually lessen and not improve.
What is the role of mediation in this kind of situation? If there is some kind of a difficulty between grandparents and either their own child, their daughter or son, or perhaps with their son-in-law or their daughter-in-law, what is the potential for success, if there is any, of mediation, and what's the opportunity, in at least in California?
I think this is what kind of Erica was raising. It depends on what county you're in.
I see.
What she was saying was recommending counties or non-recommending counties. So, for example, Santa Clara County is a non-recommending county.
Which means what?
Which means that they go to a mediator, which is a mental health professional that is an employee of the county, mm-hmm. to help, and they're solely there. It's confidential. They're solely there to see if they can work out, you know, something
whatever
between them,
yeah.
whatever it is. If they're unable to do that, that's it. You're done.
That's it.
That's
okay.
it. Whereas in a recommending county, mm-hmm. you would go to the mediator, who again is a mental health professional, an employee of that county, and if you cannot work it out, then they're going to give recommendations to the court as to what they think should happen based upon those mediation sessions.
How do you know, how does one who is not a lawyer, especially and certainly not a lawyer in the family law, how does one find out if the county is a recommending county?
You have to go to that county's court website.
Uh-huh.
Each county has their own court website. Go under family law,
uh-huh.
the family law, and they usually have like a family court services, and it will tell you under mediation whether they're recommending or non-recommending. The other place that it'll have it is if you go to the court website and look under local rules,
mm-hmm.
and then look up your family law rules, it will tell you whether they're recommending or non-recommending.
I see.
So I can tell you, for example, because I practice all over, and in at least Northern California, San Francisco's a recommending county, Santa Cruz is a recommending county, San Mateo, Contra Costa, Alameda.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think Santa Clara is one of the only ones in Northern California left that is non-recommending, and we're digging in our heels. We're like the last. we're not going there.
You're riding the bulls,
we're,
huh?
We're going to. Yeah, we're going to go down with the ship.
Oh, my.
But L.A. is non-recommending down south. But pretty much, Erica, I think most of the other outlining Southern California counties are recommending now.
Riverside
not
is.
Orange.
Yeah, Orange.
Orange is not. Oh, that's good.
Let me stop you right now because we come to the end of the statewide version of the program. All right, everybody, let me just welcome you to call in. If you have questions, comments, I know there's someone who's been on hold now for a number of minutes here. This is Your Legal Rights if you've called in or tuned in a little bit late. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. The topic is family law, focusing on the law regarding the visitation rights of grandparents with their grandchildren. Certainly, if you have a question or a comment or a concern in some other of some other family law issue, you're welcome to call in. My guests are family law attorneys, members of the family law section of the State Bar of California, Alexandra O'Neill Muller, with law office in Lake Forest, California. That's in Orange County, right, Alex?
It is.
Yeah. Erica Collins of the San Diego law firm of Basie and Fritz, and B.J. Fathom, California Board of Legal Specialization Certified Specialist in Family Law. His office is in San Jose. So I want you to feel comfortable, if you would. It's a difficult, frankly, family law I found in doing this program for 31 years. It's very difficult because sometimes or frequently people don't want their spouse or someone close to them to know they're on the air. That's difficult. But in any event, from Yountville, it's Marcia. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. My daughter, 41, is 41 and just had a new baby, it'll be 4 months, and she's been diagnosed with a mental illness, schizoaffective. And she's on SSI. She did have, she had a husband, but she separated from him as soon as she had the baby. I am her guardian for SSI, which she actually gave me that permission years ago when she knew that she would need help. Since having the baby, she's up and down because she's kind of bipolar and schizoaffective. And she allows me to visit. I keep track of everything. I take care of all the important things, the medical. The baby didn't even have medical. I mean, I I have to oversee everything, basically. She presents herself well when she speaks to a social worker. She does have a social... I got it so a social worker comes in once a week to just talk with her, and she presents fairly well. I don't know exactly how the conversations go, but she can present well in short periods of time when there's not a deep relationship. She isolates the father.
Marcia, let me do this because we're going to run out of time.
Do you have a specific
question you would like to ask?
Yes. What does a grandparent? What are the grandparents' rights with a child that that has a mental illness?
Marcia, you're in Yountville. What county is that?
That's Napa County, but my daughter will be living in Solano County, because actually another thing, we have a house in Vallejo that we're fixing up to have them move into.
So she's in Solano County. Okay.
Right now she's in Sacramento, but that's only
more. All right. And you have not, I presume, you have not contacted, for example, in your county, you haven't gone, for example, to the family law section of the county or the self-help center. All right. Well, let me get some general thoughts for you, because this is Marcia, is obviously you are experiencing a very complex situation.
Yes.
And I think it's going to involve your sitting down probably with a family lawyer and talking about this. So we'll give you some thoughts on this if you turn your radio back up. Thank you very much for calling, and I wish you good luck.
But I have a question.
You.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute, Marcia. Erica has a question.
Here. I'm on.
Yeah, yes. Erica has a question.
To answer, I'll give some general thoughts, but there's one fact we don't know yet. So does the father, does he have any illnesses or problems himself that would prevent him from being a fit parent, going and taking care of this child on a full-time basis?
He doesn't have a problem, but he wouldn't take care of the baby full-time.
That's your opinion, but is there a mental illness or a psychological problem?
No.
A drug problem or anything else?
I don't think so. One time he was an alcoholic. He did have alcohol problems, but he went to AA, and I'm almost positive that he hasn't touched anything for years.
So even though he's a former alcoholic, he's recovered and sober?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll give you some thoughts if you want to go, but I needed those facts because it would change my opinion on
Marcia,
certain things.
Marcia, if you would hang up and turn your radio back up so you can listen to what Erica and my other guests have to say.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks, Marcia. All right, go ahead, Erica.
Okay, so here's part of the problem for grandparents in this situation. In Marcia's situation, it sounds like the father may or may not want to take care of the child, and that's a different circumstance.
Yeah.
And this becomes under this where essentially you're going to have an issue. If no one files for divorce, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
If she's the de facto parent for a while and the other parent disappears, shall we say, and doesn't become involved in a child's life, then you can try to go for a guardianship. However, you can again upset the apple cart if what Marcia's saying is true, is if she's able to, in short periods of time, have the ability to basically present well. That's where mediation comes in. Because even in a guardianship, you're going to mediation. So unless they believe you need further testing, then you're going to have the circumstance where she might present well, and you're going to alienate basically the child. And then you won't get to see your grandchild. And at this juncture, as Marcia pointed out, this is what I was talking about earlier, she already has a relationship and established, and she's able to, at least right now, see what's going on. So it also becomes where the child's in danger. So those are my thoughts. It may be something that she should probably speak to a professional.
I think she should.
And a self-help with these circumstances, while I know it's a low risk or low cost factor, what you can also do is go to the County Bar Association. Yeah. You would go to the one in which the daughter lives, because that's where the child lives, and that's where the jurisdiction would lie. And sometimes they have a referral service, and sometimes you can get a free consultation, but that would be the best for Marcia and her circumstance, because this is not something that's so simple that can be explained away in a few minutes on a radio show, and I apologize for that.
No. This is the difficulty of the time goes so quickly. Marcia, in where your daughter lives, which is Solano County, call the Bar Association, Solano County Bar Association. They should have a lawyer referral service. See if you can get an appointment, an initial appointment with a family law attorney. In most counties throughout California, for a half an hour consultation, it'll cost anywhere between $25 to $35. It's a great way to get a basic understanding of what the rights and problems may be. And it may be, since obviously you're in a different county than where your daughter lives, you may be able to get a conference with an attorney, a family law attorney, over the phone. So that's what I would recommend there. And I'm going to basically, I'm going to talk very briefly about this, and then we're going to take another call. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. And for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you are in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. That's 650-369-4149. 650-369-4149. As I've just mentioned to Marcia, every county has a bar association. And as far as I know, every county in California has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours, tell them what the problem is, whatever it may be. They'll do their best to find someone for you who's an experienced attorney in that area and set you up for a half an hour consultation. And with minor exception, the charge for a half an hour consultation throughout California is between $25 to $35. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service as to keep the lawyer referral service ongoing. And here's a question that came in to the studio, given to me by Martin, who assists me on the program. A child has never met his, her grandparent. Apparently, this is due to maneuvering by the other grandparent or grandparents. Does the child have an established right of access to both grandparents? And does the missing grand have standing?
Okay.
BJ, does the missing grand have standing on this one?
Well, standing is a question. I mean, they probably, this goes to what Alex was talking about as to the factors. You don't have an established relationship. And that's going to make it very, very difficult. What's missing out of that question is, where do the parents stand? Are they still living together?
Yeah.
Or is this a situation where the other grandparents have guardianship for some reason and are keeping the child from the other grandparents? So there's a lot of factors missing. But the foundational factor that's missing is there's no existing relationship. But I can see, and again, this would be a good issue to talk with an attorney about, because there's so many factors that are unknown at this point. Are the parents together? What about the parents? Why is the other grandparent obstructing it? Or do they have guardianship? How old are the children? Is this a baby or an infant, and mm-hmm. so they haven't had an opportunity to mm-hmm. establish a relationship?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. So all of these would come into play.
Okay. All right. We've got Michael. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thank you for hearing me.
Sure.
I have a 14-year-old who dearly wants to spend all his time with me, but he spends almost all his time with her. We separated when he was 10, now he's 14, but he says that she used to leave the computer open and he'd see what she'd write, and it was so much lies. Is how he put it to me. I don't know what to do about it. And what I'd like to know is how to get him represented, or is it possible? I asked him what he wants for Christmas, and he said, "Get me a lawyer."
All right.
So how can I? Is it legally possible to get him represented.
Very good. Very good. BJ, go ahead.
Yes. I do this. I'm minor's counsel. It's about 20% of my cases. So here's the way the law stands right now. There's a new law that passed a couple years ago called Voice the Child. Children ages 14 and up, if they express a desire to what we call address the court has to find a way to do that. Does that mean the judge actually talks to the kid? Not necessarily. But another thing to know about is for minors counsel, who is appointed by the court to represent the child, and we have to take so many classes, we have to be qualified to do this. You can apply as the father. You can do an application and request the court to appoint minor's counsel for him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the main factors that have to be addressed is, it a high conflict case? Sounds like it is. Has a child expressed a desire to have an attorney? He has. And he's of an age that his voice, obviously by law now, the court would have to take it into consideration. Doesn't mean that the child's preference is always what happens. It's balanced with best interest. But that's a way to get minor's counsel on the case.
What about the cost of something like this? If the court appoints a minor's counsel, is Michael going to be hit with a substantial legal bill? How does this work?
Maybe, maybe not. So what happens is there is a application process. So what happens is we get appointed. Sometimes what the court does, they take income and expense declarations from both parents to see what are the abilities to pay. Sometimes they will order that each side has to pay a small little retainer to the minors counsel to get started.
Mm-hmm.
I will say a lot of my cases, depending upon the parents' financial situation, are they're unable to pay attorney's fees.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is, after 20 hours of work or at the end of the case or after every 20 hours, we submit an application to the court saying, we've done this, here's our billing statements.
Mm-hmm.
At our hourly rate. But here we have to also get income and expense declarations from the parents.
Yes.
Most of the parents, I will say on my cases, they can't really afford attorney's fees.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get some of mine. I don't even send in applications.
Mm-hmm.
I call it my pro bono work.
Yes.
Others, if I've done a lot of work on the case and I know the parents can't pay, we submit it to the county for payment. And the
mm-hmm.
county pays attorneys all across the board, $75 an hour.
This is Santa Clara County.
This is Santa. Yeah. No, all counties.
All counties.
It's $75 an hour. We go to the county. This is statewide.
Really? Okay.
This is by California statute.
That's a terrific. That's a very good fee. I mean, by that I mean it's a very reasonable fee considering how expensive attorneys are, generally speaking.
Right. It doesn't really. It covers our expenses,
mm-hmm.
and the parents don't pay. But this is if they don't have the ability.
Yeah.
In other cases, even if they do, they have the ability. I've gotten orders that they'll pay at $200 a month.
Yeah. Okay. You know, Michael, I suggest, since you are in San Francisco, are you not?
Well, I'm driving here, but I'm in Alameda County
Oh, you're in Alameda County.
Yeah,
I would suggest this. You have not contacted the Alameda County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service?
No, but I've been taking notes.
Well, let me give you, can you write, are you driving your car right now?
I just pulled over for this call.
Good, all right. Do you have something to write with?
I'm ready.
Okay, the Alameda County Bar Association number, and then ask for lawyer referral, is 510-302-2222. 302-2222, area code 510. My suggestion, in light of what BJ has just been talking about, is I think you need to see what an initial half an hour consultation may be with a family law attorney, and start to have this build up your confidence in this. Also, I'm sure that Alameda County, although I'm not personally familiar with it, probably has a very good family law facilitator office or self-help center. And between the lawyer referral and family law facilitator and or self-help center, you may begin to see that there's some hope there for what you'd like to do.
Oh, I thank you very much
for all your
words. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling, and be careful when you get back on the road there. Okay?
Yeah,
all right, take care.
Thanks. Thank you.
Good luck, Michael. Take care.
Thank you. Thanks.
All right, we're doing this live program on December 2nd. The toll-free number, 866-798-8255, if you have a family law question, 866-798-8255. Right now, we don't have anybody else who would like to talk with you. Maybe we will. Please, whoever would like to talk with my guests, don't wait for another few minutes, because then the program will be over and you won't be able to talk with them. You've been very quiet, Alex, for the last few minutes.
Not wanting to interrupt anybody.
Well,
else,
aren't you good? Aren't you? What a delightful
about.
Woman you are.
It's unusual for Alex. Trust
yeah, I
me.
Bet it's unusual for you, Alex. What additional thoughts do you have in the remaining few minutes of the program?
Well, what I wanted to add on to the when you'd asked a question about the role of mediation, it's important to know that mediation that's provided by the county is available when there's pending litigation of some variety. Somebody has filed some action with regard to custody mm-hmm. or visitation issues regarding children. But nothing prevents parties from hiring, if they have the resources to do so, private mediators mm-hmm. instead mm-hmm. of engaging the courts in these actions. There's nothing stopping a grandparent from attempting to engage the parents in some kind of mediation. Sometimes a neutral party eases the situation no matter what. And that can be money very well spent, because avoiding litigation makes a lot of people a lot happier anyway. It can be very expensive. It's very emotionally trying to be having your personal life examined in a court system. And that happens in family law. So the confidentiality and the privacy of mediation is very comforting, and it's very productive in that it often yields better results than leaving a decision up to an arbiter like a judge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know that in my practice, I've been a lawyer for 50 years, not a family lawyer, but in my early years of practice, I did have a family law case or two. And frankly, with all of the experience I have had the last 30 years as a deputy district attorney in consumer protection for San Mateo County, I have found in looking back that the practice of family law, frankly, I think is the most difficult. I have never been a homicide prosecutor, which may surpass being a family law attorney, but I found family law to be a very difficult area, perhaps because of the emotional aspects. And I'm pleased, Alex, that you had brought up the value of mediation, and I hope people can take advantage of that. Nancy, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I am a 76-year-old grandmother.
You sound awful young to me. Don't pull a fast one on us, Nancy.
No.
You sound a lot younger than...
I'm not. What can I say?
Okay.
Anyways, I have three grandchildren, one 14-year-old that belongs to my daughter, and two, a 7 and a 4-year-old that belongs to my son.
Mm.
Now, my problem is with my son. He refuses to let me drive the grandchildren anywhere.
Why?
And this is a common problem. I've spoken to three or four other grandparents that have, especially grandmothers, that have the same problem, because we're over 65, and I have a perfect driving record. My daughter, I have been driving my 14-year-old granddaughter around ever since she was born. But my son and daughter-in-law absolutely refuse, and it is a real problem.
Mm.
And in fact, I ran into a cousin of mine who has a young granddaughter who was facing the same problem. She's a psychologist, and she said that she was going to get a whole group of us grandmoms together for a group so we can all hash it out.
Let me get some comments for you, Nancy, on this.
I don't know. It's terrible.
So you have a good driving record?
Oh, yes.
Well, let me ask Erica to respond to you.
So one of the questions is your son and daughter-in-law refusing you access to your grandchildren?
Oh, no, I see them every Saturday, and I can see them as often as, fairly often. I volunteer at my grandson's school, as long as somebody else drives. And some of these people who are allowed to drive are not as good a driver as I am, but they're not me. And I really feel it's a control issue, as most of us do.
And unfortunately, I can understand. My mother is 73, and I would love to take her car away. I haven't. She lives with me. I would love to. But here's the biggest problem you have, in that they're allowing the access. And that's normally where you would want to first start.
Yeah.
If they're allowing the access, then that's where your hurdle is going to exist. The only thing they're doing is they're making in their mind a decision to whether it's a good position or not, can't be controlled by the court, that they just don't want you driving their children around.
They're making a what they believe is a safety decision.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the court's going to look at that's where the best interests come in.
Yeah. Right.
And so if they're allowing access, they're allowing contact, and it sounds like it's actually pretty frequent, so long as you don't drive,
exactly.
There's not much that a court is going to do with that one.
I kind of just wanted to alert you and maybe the audience that this is not an uncommon problem.
Well, that's interesting.
I'm sure it's not. It's actually not uncommon, unfortunately, even in a divorce action where a parent doesn't want the other parent to drive. It's just that, unfortunately, normally it's just sad, but, you know, it's where the control is. And I'm sorry you feel that your son's controlling you, but these are his children. Just like you raised your son and your daughter, it is a circumstance in which he's making decisions that he feels are correct, even if they may not be the best for the children.
Nancy, we're going to move on. I'm sorry. I'm sorry you have this difficulty, but at least you have...
At least I have access,
yeah.
Yes.
That's very positive. Well,
okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy, for calling. Our last call will be from Faye. Faye, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Hi.
I had a question for your guest concerning an inheritance for children who are not legally adopted. I raised two children of my husband's from the time they were in diapers, and they're now in their 40s. And I would like to have them written in my will in a way in which they could benefit from the kinds of inheritance tax laws that a child of my own would have. And I wondered if that's something I can do.
That's very interesting.
You possibly could. However, the three of us particularly mostly practice family law. The best thing you can do is find an estate planning attorney. And they're the ones who can tell you what you can and can't do and the best way for you to ensure that any inheritance they would receive may or may not be taxable or non-taxable. We can't answer those questions for you given the circumstance. It's not something any of us probably feel comfortable with given that we don't practice estate planning.
Faye, I want to make a recommendation to you, and this is because I have great regard for this man, and I know you're calling from Palo Alto, are you not?
Yes.
Yeah. Peter Stern, Stern, who has been a guest on my program many times, he is a certified specialist in estate planning. His office is in Palo Alto. He's the former chair of the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar. You might want to call him and say that you were listening to Your Legal Rights and you have a question about inheritance and that Chuck Finney suggested that you might call. I'm not trying to give lawyers work or money or anything, Faye. I'm a consumer advocate, and I want to try to help you. So his name is Peter Stern. Give him a call. Say Chuck Finney suggested I call you and see if you might be able to talk to him over the phone or perhaps come into his office.
Well, thank you so much for that recommendation.
Yeah, you take care, huh?
All right.
We do have, actually, a couple of minutes left, and we have Tracy. Tracy, welcome to the program.
Hi.
You've got about 1 minute, my dear.
Okay, great. I was in a partnership with another woman, and we had a child about 7 years ago. They have since relocated to Australia, and I don't have any legal rights to the child, although I did participate in raising her for the first 6 years of her life. I'm wondering, an attorney friend of mine told me something about new case law regarding custody or not, or at least visitation. I've been cut off from the child now completely because of a financial problem, and my attorney friend said something about this new presumed parenting ways of looking at who gets to see the child and who can cut cut somebody off.
Tracy, where is the child now?
She's in Australia.
She's in Australia. Let me ask Alex. Do you have any thoughts for Tracy on this one?
That's a really complicated question that I wish we'd gotten a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
There's the possibility that California has no jurisdiction. The United States has no jurisdiction.
Yeah.
It's hard to answer that because I don't know what was, if there is a pending action, et cetera. If there's not, my guess would be that California isn't going to have any jurisdiction. We have a federal statute that governs that about when custody is decided and where. So dealing with an attorney that maybe specializes in some international custody disputes is a place to start. Yes, there's a large body of law dealing with custody between same-sex partners, whether the child's adopted or not. That comes up frequently. But the first place to start is to figure out if California can help at all.
You know, Tracy, what I would suggest you do is call the lawyer referral service of the San Francisco Bar.
Okay.
See if they may have some referral for you of a family lawyer who has experience with dealing with international law in this area. Would you like that phone number?
I can actually probably get that.
Okay. I'll give it to you right now. 415-989-1616. 989-1616. I think what you might want to do, frankly, is start by, and I take it you have not seen an attorney.
I have an attorney friend who's told me about this.
Well, unless you have an attorney friend who's a family lawyer who has experience in dealing with international law, I think it's pretty limited. But I would call the San Francisco Bar because that's a bar association where there are attorneys who not only are familiar with California law, but they're also familiar with laws beyond California because of the nature of the practice of law, generally speaking, in San Francisco. So good luck to you.
Great.
Yeah, okay. But that's what I would suggest.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Alex, you have 30 seconds to finish this program. What do you want to say?
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk with everyone, and I hope that people listening have some more information on what's available. It's important to note that if you are looking to become to filing an action, that the forms for doing so are available on just about every county's website, as well as the state's legislative website has forms, and so the resources are out there. Referral sources.
We have ended the program. I thank you very much. I want to thank the three of you very much for joining us on this program. Pardon me. Family law attorneys and members of the family law section of the State Bar, Alexandra O'Neill Muller, with law office in Lake Forest, California, Erica Collins of the San Diego law firm of Basie and Fritz, and B.J. Fathom, California Board of Legal Specialization, certified specialist in family law with office in San Jose. I thank you very much for being with me and with us on this program. Next week on Your Legal Rights, we'll discuss the California Commission on Judicial Performance, which acts to protect the public, ensure the enforcement of rigorous standards of judicial conduct, and maintain public confidence in California's judicial system. My guests are Judge Erica Yu, Chair of the Commission on Judicial Performance, and Victoria Henley, Director and Chief Counsel of the Commission on Judicial Performance. Your Legal Rights production staff are Program Engineer Joanne Marr and Production Assistant Martin McLean. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar. Additional funding of the program is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the San Mateo County Bar Association, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the NPR satellite transmission of the program. I hope you join us next time on Your Legal Rights on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.